This is a reading of The Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Tarka Trilogy, by Richard S. Tuttle. Chapter 5, Calamar. Fram decided to alter the locations of the evening stops, just in case Geetus had passed the information on to the other bandit groups. Lark was driving the last wagon alone, and doing very well. Fram was not his usual jovial self this morning.
"You know that Jarek and I will be fired when we return," he stated.
"Why would Tulik fire you?" asked Alex.
"We beat off the bandit attack and saved his cargo. We even got rid of a dishonest driver who had probably been setting up his caravans for years."
"Well," drawled the old driver, "there's a small problem that you aren't aware of. Ramor is married to Geetus' sister. Ramor has always protected Geetus, and I am sure this event will be no exception. When the dust settles, you can be sure that the death of Geetus will be our fault. You will be fortunate if Ramor doesn't have you arrested for murder."
They rode on in silence, each lost in their own thoughts. Fram knew that he would not be able to secure another job at his age. Alex thought of the trouble he was bringing to the rest of the party. They soon camped for the night. This would be the last stop before Calamar. The boys skipped archery practice and helped set up the camp. Fram took over the cooking duties, as tonight would have been Geetus' turn. Alex told the boys about his conversation with Fram, and the mood around the campfire was quite sullen. Alex finally broke the silence.
"Look, there's no reason for everyone to be fired or go to jail just because of my actions. When we get back to Bordone, I will go see Tulik and take the responsibility for the death of Geetus. Ramor can take his wrath out on me, and the rest of you should not be harassed."
After several moments of silence, Oscar asked,
"Alex, why did you kill Geetus?"
Alex was stunned by the question.
"What do you mean?"
"He was going to kill Lark."
"Lark?" Oscar queried. "Why was Geetus going to kill you?"
"What is this nonsense?" sighed Lark. "You know very well why he was going to kill me. I told him that I had found his note on the bandits."
"Look," Oscar stated, "the way I see it is this. If Geetus had not tried to kill Lark, Alex would not have killed him. If Lark had not have found the note, Geetus would not have tried to kill Lark. If the bandits had not attacked us, Lark would not have found the note. Therefore, the bandits were responsible for the death of Geetus."
"I follow you, Oscar," Jarek chimed in. "When we get back, we can say that we were attacked by bandits and managed to kill them all. Unfortunately, Geetus was also killed."
"Unfortunately?" retorted Alex.
"Very much so," laughed Fram. "It would have been very fortunate had the bandits killed him, but I guess his death had to be unfortunate."
"Don't worry about a thing, Alex," added Oscar. "I will personally make the report to Tulik when we get back."
The boys took turns during the night standing guard, and in the morning, the caravan left for Calamar. Calamar was a very large walled city. Oscar had never seen anything so large. He was excited. He figured there must be many ways to make money in a city this size, and money was important to Oscar. The massive gates to the city were open, and the caravan entered the city. Tulik's shipment was going to a company called Sanchez Import-Export Company, and Fram knew the way by heart. Within a few minutes, Fram guided the caravan to an enormous building with the Sanchez sign on it. The building had four large double doors compared to Tulik's one. A tall, slender man of middle years with black curly hair ordered the caravan to halt. Oscar leaped from the wagon and raced up to Fram's wagon to see what was going to happen.
"Good afternoon, Fram," greeted the slender man. "I see you are right on schedule again, 3 days late. I suppose you have the usual excuse?"
"Yes, sir, Gomer," Fram replied. "Customs delay again."
"They're hiring your guards pretty young these days," noted Gomer.
"Best guards I've ever ridden with, Gomer," beamed Fram. "We were attacked 2 nights ago by 6 bandits, and the boys got them all. One of our drivers foolishly got in the way, though."
"Impressive," said Gomer. "If I recall, you've never had a good word for a guard. You must be getting old." He laughed. "Anything missing?"
"Not a parcel," stated Fram.
"Very good, then. Bring the wagons up to 4, 5, and 6. We'll get you unloaded quickly." A young, swarthy man with black hair had been standing on the other side of Fram's wagon, listening to the report. He stepped forward and said, "So you're Fram. I have heard my father mention the name several times. He said you know the road to Bordeaux better than any other Targa driver. I'm Juan Sanchez, the owner."
"I'm pleased to meet you, Juan," Fram said, "and flattered by your father's remarks. I hope he is in good health."
"Actually, he is not," replied Juan.
"That is why I am taking over the company. His health is no longer good enough to conduct the affairs of business. I have spent the last 2 weeks reviewing his ledgers, and I have to tell you that I am not happy with the service I am receiving from you. Every shipment from Bordeaux for the last year has been at least 3 days late. In addition, 4 of our shipments have been stolen between Belfort and Bordeaux. We cannot afford for these losses and delays to continue. When you return to Bordeaux, please inform Tulik that if he cannot perform, as he agreed, I will have no further need of his services. This is not meant as a slight to you, Fram. Please do not take it as such."
"I understand, Juan," replied Fram. "I will deliver the message personally." Juan retreated to his office, and Fram got the wagons to their proper docks. Oscar paraded around the building, checking out the operation. He had been in Tulik's shop many times, and had thought it was big, but this was enormous. Each of the 4 doors had 6 docks. Sanchez could load or unload over 20 wagons at the same time. He knew how much traffic came from Bordeaux, so quite a bit of Sanchez's business either came by sea or from further on up the coast. Oscar had no idea how much merchandise must be hauled around from one place to another. Small wonder that Tulik had the greatest house in Bordeaux. Sanchez's house must be even larger. He had to be a very wealthy man, wealthy enough to take a gamble. Oscar smiled and headed for Juan's office.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Sanchez," Oscar greeted. "I am Oscar Dalek, and I have a business proposition for you."
"Well, Oscar," Juan replied, "we are not formal here. You may call me Juan. So you have a proposition for me. Aren't you a little young for business, Oscar?"
"No," answered Oscar. "I am old enough to have gotten your caravan here safely, and I'm old enough to recognize when you are being cheated."
"Cheated?" Juan asked. "Who is cheating me?"
"I am also old enough to know when information is valuable," stated Oscar.
"Very well," Juan laughed, crinkling his black eyebrows. "What is your business proposition?"
"According to my calculations," Oscar began, "you have lost over 100 wagon days because of Tulik's delays. That amounts to over 30,000 crowns. In addition, you've lost 12 wagons worth of cargo. Now, I don't know how much the cargo is worth, but you do. Point is that you expect some losses and delays, and you figure that into your costs. But these costs are excessive. You can stop them."
"You have quite a head for business after all, young Oscar. How can I stop them?"
"You can enter into a contract with Dalek Shipping," replied Oscar. "You will supply me with 1 wagon, and the parts for 2 more wagons. I will deliver your goods from Balfour to Calamar at the rate of 3 wagons per month. I will also carry your exports to Bordeaux or Balfour in the same wagons. I will charge you the same rate that you are currently paying Tulik, but I will deduct 1,000 crowns for each day that I am late. I do not anticipate losing any of your cargo, but as we both know, bandits do exist. I'm prepared to pay for any cargo that is lost if my losses exceed 6 wagons a year."
"Impressive," stated Juan. "If Tulik made me this offer, I would jump at it. No offense meant, Oscar, but I'm not quite as thrilled hearing it from you. You ask for the wagons because you do not own any. You do not own any because you have no business. You do not have the finances to live up to your bargain, and I think that you do not understand the business very well. I am dissatisfied with Tulik, but he has good drivers, good guards, and the finances to back an offer like this. I'll tell you what. You get Tulik to make the same offer, and I will give you 10,000 crowns."
"Tulik cannot make the same offer," said Oscar, "because he is the cause of your losses."
"What do you mean?" demanded Juan, "that he is the cause of my losses?"
"Tulik's shipments are delayed for 3 days because he is suspected of smuggling and killing a customs inspector. My shipments would not be delayed. Tulik also delivers your cargo in 2 stages, first from Balfour to Bordeaux, and then from Bordeaux to Calamar. I would deliver direct from Balfour to Calamar. As for Tuluk's good guards, they are in jail. They were put there by me and my associates, and we are the guards on this shipment. As for Tuluk's good drivers, they will be working for me, including Fram.
You have thought this out rather well, admitted Juan.
But you still do not have the financial resources to honor your contract.
Tuluk has been in this business for many years, and he lost 12 wagon loads of my goods this year.
I also do not have the overhead that Tuluk has, smiled Oscar. All of your payments will be profits after paying off my men. I will have sufficient money to hold up my end of the agreement.
Juan frowned as he stared at the young man before him, and Oscar decided it was time to close the deal.
Oscar took out the map that Lark had found on the bandit and placed it on Juan's desk.
This is the reason that you have lost so much cargo. We took it off one of the bandits that we killed. It was given to him by Tulik's driver who died. Tuluk has been stuffing his pockets with more of your money than he should have.
Juan looked at the map, and Oscar could see the fury burning Juan's dark eyes.
I will have the contract drawn up by tomorrow morning, Oscar. My men will load the wagon parts in a new wagon for you. You will have to supply your own horses. My agent in Balfour is Mike Grother. You will make your first pickup in Balfour in 3 weeks. Tell Fram not to bother with the message for Tuluk. Let him find out on his own. I will hold you to your contract, Oscar. Do not disappoint me.
Thank you, Juan, acknowledged Oscar. I will not let you down, and soon I will have the financial resources that you spoke of.
Juan laughed. I'm sure you will, Oscar.
Oscar went out and offered Fram and Jurek jobs, and they both accepted. The shipment back to Bordeaux would not be ready until morning, so the group decided to see the city. The large, deep-water port fascinated Oscar. His hometown of Bordeaux did not have deep water, and the fishing vessels were flat-bottomed to allow them to navigate in the shallow waters. Calamar was a true seaport. He saw ships from Sordoa, Lenore, and even the mysterious Isles of the Sea. But the vast majority of ships were Cordonian. Fram explained that Cordonia did not have a seaport on the Sordoan Sea, and this had led to an ages-old conflict with Targa. Cordonia and Targa both claimed the area north of Targa and east of Cordonia. Targa claimed that Cordonia ended at the West Mountains, and Cordonia claimed that Targa ended at the Theiss River. The land north of the Theiss River and east of the West Mountains became known as the disputed area. Most shipping was conducted in the Sordoan Sea, leaving Cordonia the option of either trading via land or braving the Horn of Lenore. The Horn of Lenore was a long peninsula extending southward from the continent and the location of the worst storms and seas known to sailors. Oscar watched as workers unloaded one of the large Cordonian ships. He was amazed at the amount of cargo that a single ship could hold. Someday, he promised himself, he would own a great ship. But right now, he would settle for Tulik's house. From the harbor, the group went to the market square. There was an enormous area of shops, stalls, and stands. The size of the market was greater than the entire town of Bordeaux. One could buy anything here. Oscar spent many hours perusing the wares, paying particular attention to what goods came from outside Cordonia. He saw spices and strange woods from the Isle of Gracchus, which was located in the Sordoan Sea. He saw coconuts, dates, pottery, and art from Sordoa, animal skins, horns, and tusks from Lenore. This one market was filled with opportunities for a shipper, and he had heard that Cantor, the capital of Cordonia, had a market twice as large. The group had dinner at a marketplace inn where they spent the night. In the morning they went to Sanchez's warehouse where Oscar signed the contract. Alex had to drive the extra wagon, and Oscar rode with Fram. The trip back to Bordeaux was uneventful. Oscar spent the entire week pumping Fram for information about shipping, Tulik's contacts, travel in the kingdom, and possible problems that he should expect with his new business. When they reached Bordeaux, Alex drove the new wagon behind Marta's new home and tied up the spare horses. He then joined Jurek in the middle wagon. Everyone was shouting greetings and questions, but the homecoming would have to wait until they delivered the cargo. The caravan entered Tuluk's, and Ramor waved them to their docks. Ramor came over to Fram and asked, "Where's Gidas?" Fram told him about the ambush and that Gidas had been killed during the attack.
Ramore was livid. He smashed his fist several times into the side of the wagon, and it was clear to all that Ramore was having a difficult time controlling his rage. He stormed off in the direction of Tulik's office. Fram and Jarek had not yet been paid their wages yet. It was customary to be paid at the end of a trip. Tulik had given Alex his pay in advance to ensure that they accepted the job. Ramore came back from Tulik's office a little more composed. He informed Alex, Lark, and Oscar that their services were no longer needed. He then asked Fram and Jarek to accompany him to Tulik's office. "Fram," Tulik began, "you were head of this caravan, and you returned without our best driver. That is inexcusable. Had you kept the original guards out of trouble, you would have been protected by better than boys. Your conduct might be explained as a result of your old age, but I rather think it is the result of poor judgment. Tulik Shipping can no longer use your services. You are dismissed without pay. If you want your pay, I would suggest that you go talk to the overpaid guards who accompanied you. Now get out." Fram smiled, turned, and left the office. "Jarek," Tulik continued, "I can find no fault of yours in this mess. Ramore has told me that you have worked with Giddes, and that you are a smart boy. I am considering you for the position of lead driver on the Bordeaux to Calamar run, but I need to be assured of your loyalty to the firm. I understand from Giddes that you know how to keep your mouth shut when necessary, but I need proof of your ability to follow orders without question. Here is your pay for the last trip. Go with Ramore, and he will instruct you on what is necessary to secure the position of lead driver." Wordlessly, Jarek turned and followed Ramore out of Tulik's office and into Ramore's. Ramore indicated that Jarek should sit as he pulled out a piece of paper and began writing. Ramore scribbled furiously as he said, "You know, Jarek, Giddes had a special place in this business. He had become quite wealthy before his accident, and you can too. That Sanchez is always cheating us on our rates, so we play a little game with him to recoup our losses. Here, sign this." Jarek looked at the document he was being asked to sign. It was an affidavit attesting to the attack on Sanchez's shipment. The part that bothered Jarek was that it stated that the attack took place on the way back, and that all the wagons had been lost to bandits. It stated that Jarek had been the only known survivor, but that others of the party may have been in collusion with the bandits. Jarek stated, "I can't sign this. It's all a lie." "You will sign it if you wish to remain employed," replied Ramore. "Don't worry. You'll be given extra compensation of, say, 500 crowns for your trouble. And there will be other opportunities for you to line your pockets. Giddes' death has left a very fortunate opening for you." "And if I go to the authorities with this paper?" asked Jarek. "What of it?" answered Ramore. "I have merely filled in the paper as you told me the event happened. Of course, if you were to do that, I don't think you would live very long. Accidents do happen now and then." Jarek threw the paper down and stormed out of the office. Out on the street, the rest of the party was waiting for him, and he described the attempt to get him to fill Giddes' place. Oscar gave Fram the 100 crowns that he would have been paid, and they walked back to Marta's. The villagers were all excited to see their boy's return, and makeshift tables had been set up in the field for a celebration. Everyone had questions for the boys. They wanted to know about the horses, the wagon, Fram and Jarek. The tales of the bandit attack in Calamar enthralled them. Everyone congratulated Oscar on his new business. The atmosphere was very festive. Alex had a chance to look at Marta's new house. It was quite large for a townhouse, and Marta's face beamed with pride and thanks as she showed it. Alex announced that they would have a day of rest, and then the villagers would leave to found their new village. Everyone partied, and with pride, looked back at what they had accomplished since coming to Bordeaux. A few hours later, Lark's mother, Charlene, and the Inspector Rhys made an announcement. They had planned to get married in the spring, but they wanted their friends to join in the event, so they were having the wedding tomorrow. Marta announced that Charlene and Rhys were going to share her new home until they found a place of their own, no matter how many years that took. All laughed in the party and resumed. The next day was even more festive. The villagers had decorated the field for the marriage. Many of Reese's friends from the stockade came to the event, as did many of the townspeople.
It was a combination wedding and farewell to the villagers that so many of the townspeople had accepted as their own. Lark came over and talked to Alex. Lark had decided to stay in Bordone. His mother was the only family he had, and Oscar had offered him a job with the Dalek Shipping Company. Alex was glad for Lark, but sad at the thought of not having Lark by his side. He had grown very fond of Lark. In fact, Alex was going to miss Oscar and Fram as well. As the festival went into the evening, the boys helped Oscar assemble the two wagons. Oscar, Fram, Jerick, and Lark would be leaving for Balfour before sunup. They wanted to get the wagons out of town before Tulik saw them. Tulik would eventually learn of this new competition, but Oscar would rather have it be later. Alex and the villagers would be leaving at dawn on their final leg of the journey started so long ago. Lark had donated his caravan pay to the village to help buy livestock when they got closer to the village site. The full fury of winter was only a month away, and the villagers had a good 2-week trek in front of them. The boys would have their hands full providing shelter from the weather for the villagers. Alex and Layman decided that when they arrived at the site, they would build one large building for all to share. When each of the villagers finally had their own home, the large building would be converted into a barn for Lenore and Marga. It was going to be hard on the villagers with no men and too few boys around for the heavy jobs. But Alex's admiration for these women and children was not unfounded. They would not only survive, they would handle it well. The valley that they were headed for had been given to Peter's father for service to the crown. Peter's father had saved King Olweg's life in the last Cordonian War. The king was reviewing the battlefield when a band of enemy archers got behind the Targan lines. One archer spotted the king and hoped for a quick and easy end to the conflict. Alex's grandfather, Gandhi, was a runner and found himself in the position of throwing his body in front of the king. The move saved King Olweg, but cost Gandhi his arm. When Gandhi returned home from the war, he was a hero and wore his disability like a medal. Several times he had taken Peter to see his valley. After several years, though, Gandhi could no longer cope with his useless arm and began drinking heavily. Peter had been handling the felling of the trees alone and had been doing fairly well. He tried to console his father, but was unable to. One night his drunken father threw the deed into the fire, alternately laughing and crying about the grant of a wooded valley to a one-armed lumberman. Several days later they found his body in a stream. Peter had loaded the body into the carpenter's cart, and along with his son Alex, had transported the body to his father's valley to be buried. It was the only time Alex had ever been to the Gandhi Valley. It was a brisk winter's morn when they entered Gandhi Valley. The valley was heavily wooded, as were the slopes of the hills surrounding it. Alex led the party to a large clearing at the north end of the valley, and declared that this would be the site of the village. There was a stream that led through the valley, and Alex wanted the village to be upstream of the farms and timbering. On a little knoll at the edge of the clearing, he found his grandfather's marker and spent a few moments in prayer. Alex held a village meeting to lay out his plan and get input from the villagers. Eddie volunteered to be Alex's assistant felling trees. Tora made a motion to name the village at this time. The motion passed, and the village was named Lavinda in memory of Alex's mother. Each villager found a task to do in setting up the new village. Within a week they had the barn roofed and were working on the inner partitions. Alex and Eddie were already working on clearing the edges of the village. Eddie had been sleeping well this last week. He was not muscular like Lark, and at first had difficulty performing the tasks that Alex set out for him. Everyone worked from before dawn until after dusk. Eddie was constantly in pain, but never complained. Alex admired him for that, and was determined to make a woodsman out of him. Nolan, who was already skilled at painting, was learning carpentry from Layman. Kyle and Marga had teamed up to obtain whatever provisions the villagers would need to get through the winter. Tora and Kara had created a drawing of the village, and families were allowed to select their desired location for a home. When the first heavy snows came, the village of Lavinda was ready.